नमो भागवते वासुदेवाय
नमो भागवते वासुदेवाय
नमो भागवते वासुदेवाय
नमो भागवते वासुदेवाय
manifestation and the form of time which devours everything, and even the form of Vishnu, four-handed, have all been exhibited by Krishna. Thus Krishna is the origin of all these manifestations. So one of the main points that Prabhupada emphasizes in this last section of the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita is the identification of the different personalities, if you like, or the personality and features of Godhead. And the points being made, Prabhupada makes the point very often in these purports, in this last section, that the universal form is a transcendental form, obviously because it's coming from Krishna, and Krishna himself is Divya, transcendental. But it is not a superior form to the form, to the four-handed form. Right? When Arjuna sees the universal form, then he feels fear, awe, wonder, a little distress. Right? So he asks Krishna to reveal yourself or show yourself in a form which is dear to me. But he requests him to first of all reveal his four-handed form. So the point that's being made, Prabhupada makes it over and over again, that the universal form, it's a transcendental form, but the superior form is Krishna in his two-handed form. Right? That's the superior form. You know, Arjuna wants to reciprocate his friendship with Krishna, and when he sees the universal form, he can only relate to that in a mood of awe and reverence. Wonder and fear. And so he apologizes to Krishna for being so familiar. And Prabhupada makes a point quite often in this chapter that the universal form is not actually attractive for the devotees. The reason why it's not attractive for the devotees is because it's very difficult to reciprocate with personally. Right? You know, it's hard to reciprocate in a friendly way with somebody who you know ultimately is going to kill you. When you think about it. And it's interesting, Krishna had a purpose for revealing the universal form to Arjuna. Arjuna's working as his servant, or as his friend basically, but also working to fulfill Krishna's mission. And so he asks Krishna to reveal the universal form for the reason of establishing the bona fides of anybody else who might come in the future. Right? But in this last section, Prabhupada explains that Krishna had a reason for revealing the universal form. That was probably one of them, but manifested on Arjuna. The other reason was is that he wanted to show Arjuna the outcome of the battle. And Prabhupada makes the point that a devotee ordinarily doesn't like to perform abominable activities. And the abominable activities are, you know, things like being disrespectful to your elders, or, you know, killing your guru. So, you know, Arjuna has to face Bhishma Dev and fight against him, and he has to be killed. He has to fight against Drona Acharya. He has to be killed. His brother, does he know that his brother, but anyway, Karna. He wants him to know that Karna is to be destroyed. These are the main opponents, right? And who else was there? Jayadratha. So, Krishna's purpose for revealing the universal form was to show Arjuna the outcome of the battle, and that the cause was a just cause, and that what he was doing is correct, because Arjuna was concerned about fighting, and that his fighting would be sinful. So Krishna wanted to reveal the universal form to dispel these doubts of Arjuna, so that he would be. And of course, you know, when Arjuna sees these things, and he said, you know, he reciprocates also. He says, you know, I, everything that you do is good. I understand. Yes, you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Param Brahma, Param Dharma, Pavitram, Paramam Bhavan. You were the Supreme. Krishna reveals the universe, and of course, in order for Arjuna to be able to see the universal form, he has to be in order to see the universal form, what do you have to be? Huh?
PD.
What's PD? Not, probably not in the term that we use, PD. We usually classify somebody as a PD who's actually not a PD. Well, he thinks he is. That's what we call the PD. You heard of that? Maybe not. We call it the pure devotee syndrome.
I thought Krishnamurti said, when I first came to the temple, Krishnamurti said in Crossroads, they called me PD, and I thought because he was of dark skin complexion, you guys might not know, but I thought they meant Puff Daddy. Puff Daddy's a rapper. Puff Daddy.
Puff Daddy. Yes. It's interesting because in a purport to the 48, Prabhupada says, in order to see the universal form, you have to be a devotee. But then he says you actually have to be a pure devotee. But then he says that the demigods are able to, because we see that the universal form has not been seen before, right? It's not been seen before, but by Arjuna's seeing, or Krishna allowing Arjuna to see it then, or manifesting it for Arjuna, then the other demigods and other denizens, elevated devotees, got to see the universal form. And Prabhupada says, and we know that the demigods are not always pure devotees as such. Huh? Interesting what Prabhupada says, pure devotees. But he says, they're disciplic devotees. Anybody read that bit? He says disciplic devotees. And, you know, there was once one of the Prabhupada was asked by the devotees, a devotee on a morning walk, you know, how many pure devotees are there, Prabhupada? And Prabhupada said, well, how many members are there of ISKCON? So in one sense, pure devotee in this instance, it seems, means, you know, somebody who's following the process of devotional service or is practicing as a devotee. They are recognized as a pure devotee, not that one has to be a 100% pure devotee. But certainly, if one wants to see the universal form, you have to be a devotee, and a devotee in the disciplic succession, or a disciplic devotee, as Prabhupada puts it. And that is sufficient for them to be pure enough to see the universal form. Prabhupada mentions, you know, Krishna makes the point. If you want to see me, then you have to be, and at the end of this section, at the end of this chapter, in order to see Krishna, you have to be a pure devotee. And especially if you want to see Krishna in his two-armed form, because it mentions, if you want to see the universal form, then it's possible by performing activities that are recommended in the Vedas, study of the scripture, performance of sacrifice, austerities and so forth, but those activities alone are not sufficient. What's required is one has to be a devotee, and so things should therefore be done for Krishna, but in order to see Krishna. So Krishna reveals the universal form to show his opulence, if you like, his potency, his power, but he then transforms into the four-armed form. Very beautiful, very attractive, always youthful, very pleasing to the devotees to see Krishna in that form, rather than the ferocious, almost monstrous form, what does Prabhupada say? A godless display of opulence. Right? Which is interesting because it, you know,
it's horrible.
Yeah, Ghoram, Ghoram, right? Ghoram. So, Krishna transforms this Ghoram, horrible form of the transcendental, the Vishvarupa, the universal form, into the four-armed form of Vishnu. That immediately then, that vision immediately, and then he transforms into his two-armed form. That immediately then dispels the fear of Arjuna. Huh? Prabhupada says, you know, if you become Krishna conscious, then all of your fear is disappearing. So, Prabhupada makes the point that the reason why Krishna reveals the universal form and the four-armed form and then the two-armed form, Manushya Rupam, like a human, is to show the superiority of the two-armed form. Right? This is the highest feature, not the universal form with all its power and potency, and not the four-armed form, but rather the two-armed form. Very nice. And basically, you know, in this last section, can't know Krishna through austerities, study of the Vedas, all these different activities, but rather those activities dovetailed in or as part of devotional service, and they're very much part of devotional service, the nine processes of devotional service specifically, are the means by which one can understand Krishna. So it's through devotional service. That one can see Krishna. Now, let's have a look at a couple of these. There's some things. I wanted to do a bit of an extended, but an extra we've got some group work to do here. So we'll just have a look at some key points out of these verses, and then we'll have some fun preparing some presentations. So, text 48. Who can have divine vision? The devotees. So one has to be a devotee in order to see these different aspects or features. I think we've covered all of that. That's okay. Let's go to 51. Yeah, this is important. Purport is the purport. Here the words manusham, rupam clearly indicate the supreme personality of Godhead. To be originally two-handed. Because this is a bit of a problem in India for people, you know, who are taught that that Krishna is one of the avatars of Vishnu. Right? This is what... But we can see from the Bhagavad Gita that first of all, Krishna shows the universal form, then he then shows the point form, then he reverts back to his original form. He says, this is my original form. And not impersonal either, right? Not impersonal. There's another argument that actually is mentioned. This might have been why I want to concentrate on 48, because this... let me just have a quick look here. No, that's not fine. Okay, back to 51, yeah. Oh, yeah. Those who deride Krishna as if he were an ordinary person are shown here to be ignorant of his divine nature. So he's not an ordinary person. You know, this is the problem. That's why it's so difficult to understand Krishna. And Prabhupada mentions, you know, even the demigods waited for Krishna's appearance when he was within the womb. There's the prayers of the demigods to Krishna within the womb of Devaki. They're eager to see this form of Krishna. But then we see when Lord Brahma saw Krishna just playing with his friends, you know, he with his left hand and so forth, just playing as a cowherd boy, then he was bewildered by that apparent just human manifestation. Bewildered him so much so that he thought, this can't be God. So difficult to understand. If Krishna is like an ordinary human being, then how is it possible for him to show the universal form and again to show the four-handed Narayan form? So it's very clearly stated in Bhagavad Gita that one who thinks that Krishna is an ordinary person and who misguides the reader by claiming that it is the impersonal Brahman within Krishna speaking is doing the greatest injustice. The impersonal Brahman has taken on a form, a temporary material manifestation. That actually takes away the personality of Krishna, makes it into a mundane. That's what Prabhupada says. Those who deride Krishna as an ordinary man. He's not an ordinary man. An ordinary man can't manifest the universal form, then the four-handed form, then change into the two-handed form. Krishna has actually shown his universal form and his four-handed Vishnu form. So how can he be an ordinary human being? A pure devotee, not him, this one. A pure devotee is not confused by misguiding commentaries on Bhagavad Gita because he knows what is what. And I think in text 46. Anyway, maybe it's here, maybe it's the beginning. Prabhupada says this is a qualification of a devotee. It was the reason why we study the Bhagavad Gita, so that we could know what is what and not be misguided. And then Prabhupada makes a point, must be, it's in a later purport, Prabhupada says that you know, the Bhagavad Gita is simple, basic philosophy. It's the basis, it's the ABCs. But he says, it's so complete, it's complete enough for us to understand what is what. So we can identify a charlatan, or somebody who wants to misguide us, or wants to misguide others, just by studying the Bhagavad Gita. We can know enough about spiritual topics to be able to work out who's bogus and who's not. The original verses of Bhagavad Gita are as clear as the sun. They don't need too much illumination because they're already illuminated. They do not require lamplight from foolish commentators. Nice point. Then go to 52. And here, these are just reinforcing these points that I just made before. In the purport, in the 48th verse of this chapter, Lord Krishna concluded, revealing his universal form, and informed Arjuna that this form is not possible to be seen by so many pious activities, sacrifices, etc. The universal form can only be seen, or any form of Krishna can only be seen by devotional service. Now here, the word sudurdarshan. Durudarsham. What do we have what's the name of the TV station in India? Durudarsham. Right? What does that mean? Hard to see. Durudarsham. What does that mean?
Distance.
It's the same word though, isn't it? Durudarshan?
Yeah.
Vision from a distance. In the early days it used to be hard to see. The reception wasn't that good. It's better now. Is Durudarshan still operating?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay. It's like a government station.
Still surveying.
Still surveying. So, difficult to see Krishna. Krishna's two-hand form is still more confidential. One may be able to see the universal form of Krishna by adding a little tinge of devotional service to various activities like penances, Vedic study, and philosophical speculation. It may be possible, but without a tinge of bhakti, one cannot see. That has already been explained. Still, beyond that universal form, the form of Krishna with two hands is still more difficult to see. Even for the demigods like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, they decided to see him, and we have evidence in the Srimad Bhagavatam that when he was supposed to be in the womb of Mother Devaki, all the demigods from heaven came to see the marvel of Krishna, and they offered nice prayers to the Lord. Because it is a marvel in one sense that here's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is unbound, if you like, and yet here he is manifest in the womb of his mother. That's quite amazing. And in one sense, might make people think, oh, it's just an ordinary person in any case. Right? Of course, the demigods could see from the countenance of Devaki, from her effulgence, that she wasn't giving birth to an ordinary child. And they offered nice prayers to the Lord, although he was not at that time visible to them. They waited to see him. A foolish person may deride him, thinking him an ordinary person, and may offer respect, not to him, but to the impersonal something within him. But these are all nonsensical postures. Krishna, in his two-armed form, is actually desired to be seen by demigods like Brahma and Shiva. So that the most elevated personalities in the universe want to see him. And so we should also be enthusiastic to see, but see it in the proper way. Okay. Yeah, and if we go down, if you go down to the bottom of the last part of the last paragraph, the transcendental process is described in Bhagavad Gita, how to understand Krishna. To hear about Krishna from authority. That is the actual Vedic process. And those who are actually in the Vedic line hear about Krishna from authority, and by repeated hearing about him, Krishna becomes dear. As we have several times discussed, Krishna is covered by his yogamaya potency. He is not to be seen or revealed to anyone and everyone. But Krishna retains the right to reveal himself to any, he who he chooses, actually. And of course, that's explained. We'll look at the last in text 55. Prabhupada explains the whole process in the purport. That last purport is a really interesting purport, and also 54, because and in fact, Prabhupada says that this 55 is the essence of the Bhagavad Gita. Is the essence of the Bhagavad Gita. So we'll come to that. This is the process. Hearing from the devotees, chanting about Krishna, remembering Krishna, you know, all the nine processes of devotional service. And these are the means by which one can understand Krishna. Or put it this way, make oneself eligible so Krishna will reveal himself. Right? You know, in the beginning of the 11th chapter, Arjuna asked Krishna, you know, can I see your universal form? Will you allow me to see it? And Krishna says, I'll give you the transcendental eyes by which you can see it. Right? So, you know, to see Krishna is not an ordinary thing. It's not a mundane thing. It's a special achievement. Shiva and Brahma are keen to see him. The demigods are keen to see Krishna. And he only really reveals himself to those who he chooses. And that qualification is this practice of bhakti, the performance of devotional service. Only by one to whom he reveals himself can he be seen. This is confirmed in Vedic literature. For one who is a surrendered soul, the absolute truth can actually be understood. The transcendentalist, by continuous Krishna consciousness and by devotional service to Krishna, can have his spiritual eyes opened. You know, we depend so much on our eyes. You know that? But actually our eyes are really tricky. They trick us in seeing things that aren't even there. The way the brain works, the eyes, we really have a lot of emphasis on them, but we've done tests. What do they do? They get a person to make a sound like gut. Right? And then what they do is they have a visual image of a person saying ma. Right? So you're hearing gut, but you're seeing ma. And so what happens actually, you end up perceiving that what's being said is ba. Seriously, this is done a test, because we depend so much on our eyes. And so when we, even though we're hearing something, but we're seeing the person go, like that, we think they just said, but. We actually heard gut. But you know, Prabhupada says, I've been reading a book called Brain Rules. And one of the things they say, sight trumps all other senses. Right? And you see how the senses are actually very deceiving. We depend so much on our vision. It depends so much on our vision. This is an example of how vision tricks us, because you know, we see things, I don't know if it's happened to you, that you've seen something, and what happens is, the way our brain processes visual images, it actually makes up part of the information. Or another example, there's actually a dead spot in our eyes. Well, there's a spot in our eyes where we don't see anything, because that's where the image collection is put into our nerve. Right, so we all have a blind spot. We all have a blind spot. When you're playing cricket, and the ball's been pelted down, and it's in your blind spot, you can't see it. So you don't know how to play the ball. So what do we do? What happens? The brain actually makes up for that blind spot in our eyes and creates, so when we look at something, we see the total scene. But what's actually going on in our brain is, it's actually making up information to make it look like we're seeing everything. Very, very tricky.
I've seen a documentary probably, in a crowded bus, one person is getting into the bus, and we're all asked to follow that person. He's getting into the bus and he's walking through the aisle, and he's going and taking a seat. But in actuality, there was a big gorilla sitting in one of the person wearing a mask of gorilla. The eyes didn't notice at all. Since we are asked to follow that person, he's just getting into the bus and he's going through. But there was a big, it was crowded bus, and the person wearing a mask of gorilla sitting. Next time they asked us to be the same scene, and they asked us to spot, do you see anything different? Still we didn't find, but later they said that, see, in the corner of the window there's a person sitting with a mask of gorilla. So that eyes are that tricky, bro.
Yeah, I went looking for the gorilla, but I didn't see it.
Yeah, so you see the colors. If you see the colors, and if you ask to name the color, if it's written in a different way, if it's yellow color and it's written as black, the eyes try to read that and say that it's black. It's written down, the name of the color is...
So we can't trust, my point is, reaffirming it, we can't trust what we see. So devotional service begins with hearing. Right? Devotional practice begins with hearing, that's how we gather information reliably. By hearing. If we want to understand Krishna, then we need to follow the process of devotional service, beginning with hearing and chanting. So that's what's being emphasized, and that's mentioned here. If we want to be endowed with spiritual vision, it's not something that we do necessarily with our material eyes, but rather it's something that's endowed upon us by Krishna. Spiritualized, in other words, or spiritualized. The transcendental, I already read that. Such a revelation. One has. By devotional service to Krishna, one can have his spiritual eyes open and can see Krishna by revelation. Such revelation is not possible even for the demigods. Right? Not possible even for the demigods. But that's to see the two-handed form of Krishna and understand him. They were able to see the universal form, but that doesn't mean automatically that you're able to see them and understand the two-handed form of Krishna. Therefore, it is difficult even for the demigods to understand Krishna, and the advanced demigods are always in hope of seeing Krishna in his two-handed form. The conclusion is that although to see the universal form of Krishna is very, very difficult, and not possible for anyone and everyone, it is still more difficult to understand his personal form as Shyama Sundara. Nice. Okay. And this is mentioned in verse 53. The form you are seeing with your transcendental eyes cannot be understood simply by studying the Vedas, nor by undergoing serious penances, nor by charity, nor by worship. It is not by me these means that one can see me as I am. Then in text 54, only by undivided devotional service can I be understood as I am. Standing before you, and can thus be seen directly. Only in this way can you enter into the mysteries of my understanding, so undivided devotional service. So these two purports, 54 and 55, there's a lot of information here pertinent to our practice of devotional service. Yeah. And it's interesting because Prabhupada then talks about austerities. Right? Krishna says you can't understand me by the performance of fruitive activities, penances, austerities. But then what does Prabhupada say? He says one can perform penance in accordance with the principles of Krishna consciousness, right? So he gives a description of what kind of penances we should perform. What does he say? Fast Ram Janmashtami Day. Right? Now, these are our penances. Fast Ram Ekadasi. Right? Now, and then what about charity? He says one should give in charity, but give in charity to who? To the devotees. Right? You know, if you want to build a building, then build a temple. Then he says, you know, the real process is an interesting point. Prabhupada quotes this verse: Yatra deve para bhakti yatha deve tatha guru tasyaite kapita yataha prakasham te mahatmanaha. This is the qualifications that are required to see Krishna, basically. One who has unflinching devotion for the Supreme Lord and is directed by the spiritual master. Very important point. In whom he has similar unflinching faith. So one must have faith in the order of the spiritual master. We have faith in Krishna's instructions, but we have to have faith in pursuing the instructions of the spiritual master. Then one can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead by revelation. Krishna has to reveal himself. One cannot understand Krishna by mental speculation. For one who does not take personal training under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, it is impossible to even begin to understand Krishna. Interesting. Okay. And then there's a description here about the universal form and how it's a temporary manifestation, or life's transcendental. It's a temporary manifestation. And this is why the Narayan form is superior, because it's a four-handed eternal form. And then superior to that, again, as we've discussed, is the two-handed form. And then there's some quotations. Prabhupada quotes many statements, especially from the Gopala Tapani Upanishad, which establish Krishna as the Supreme. Now, the last part that's important here. The universal form, this is text 54, the paragraph, the last paragraph. The universal form is not attractive for pure devotees who are in love with the Lord in different transcendental relationships. The Supreme Godhead exchanges transcendental love in his original form of Krishna. Therefore, to Arjuna, who was so intimately related to Krishna, with Krishna in friendship, this form of the universal manifestation was not pleasing. So that's why it's not, that's why the devotees don't need to strive to see the universal form. Now, was it in Puru Chandra Dhruva's book? Is it anywhere in that? Or was it somewhere else? One devotee said to Prabhupada, I've been chanting Hare Krishna for 6 months now and I haven't seen the universal form yet. The Prabhupada said, just keep chanting. Just keep chanting. Or another time, a devotee said, when I chant Hare Krishna, then I see lights. Prabhupada said, just keep chanting. So, you know, we're not interested too much in having wondrous experiences when we're chanting Hare Krishna. Although what will happen is when we're chanting Hare Krishna, we'll, by concentrating and focusing the mind on Krishna, we will gradually find the mind becomes peaceful. And that we're able to meditate more on our service, on serving the deities, on serving the spiritual master, know, we will become peaceful. We will become peaceful as a result. Yeah. Therefore, to Arjuna, who was so intimately related with Krishna in friendship, this form of the universal manifestation was not pleasing, rather it was fearful. It was fearful. Arjuna, who was a constant companion of Krishna, must have had transcendental eyes. He was not an ordinary man. Therefore, he was not captivated by the universal form. This form may seem wonderful to persons who are involved in elevating themselves by creative activities, but to persons who are engaged in devotional service, the two-handed form of Krishna is the most dear. Okay, so you might want to have a look at this last verse and the purport. Basically, it teaches us the process of devotional service. How to engage in the process of devotional service. How to work for Krishna. How to engage in Krishna karma. Prabhupada says in the purport, no work should be done by any man except in relationship to Krishna. This is called Krishna karma. And then Prabhupada explains how actually we can go ahead, how we can engage ourselves in Krishna karma to become Krishna conscious. Then, the next stage, it talks about seeing Krishna as supreme. Mat Paramah. At the beginning of this purport, Prabhupada says, I'll read the translation. My dear Arjuna, this is important, very important verse. My dear Arjuna, he who engages in my pure devotional service, free from the contaminations of creative activities and mental speculation, he who works for me, who makes me the supreme goal of his life, and who is friendly to every living being, he certainly comes to me. So the first thing that Prabhupada says in the purport is, anyone who wants to approach the supreme of all the personalities of Godhead on the Krishna local planet in the spiritual sky and be intimately connected with the supreme personality of Krishna must take this formula as stated by the supreme himself. Therefore, this verse is considered to be the essence of Bhagavad Gita. Huh? Pure devotional service, free from the contamination of karma and jnana, And as Prabhupada mentioned, you know, Kamsa was always thinking of Krishna. Right? So you could say he's following Krishna's instructions. Manmana. Right? Manmana. He's always thinking of Krishna. But he was thinking of Krishna. How can I kill him? So it wasn't favorable. So devotional service has to be performed free from material desire and be pleasing to Krishna in that it's, you know, it's favorably performed. Then one will become eligible. So one should see Krishna as the supreme, not the universal form of the supreme, not the four-handed form, but the two-handed form of Krishna as the supreme personality of Godhead. And in order to be successful, then Prabhupada says next, one of the most important items of devotional service is associating with devotees. Which means then conversely what? Disassociation with materialistic people, yes. Prabhupada says here, after this, he quotes this verse. In this verse, your Rupa Goswami clearly states that if anyone wants to execute unworthy devotional service, he must be free from all kinds of material contamination. He must be free from the association of persons who are addicted to creative activities and mental speculation. Now, even sometimes we as devotees, even though we're in a society of devotees, are still addicted to these things. When free from such unwanted association from the contamination of material desire, one favorably cultivates knowledge of Krishna. That is called pure devotional service. This is for your kamsa. Now then, another nice point here. A devotee He is a friend of everyone. And the way that Krishna is friend of everyone, therefore he said here that he has no enemy. How is this? The devotee situated in Krishna consciousness knows that only devotional service to Krishna can relieve a person from all the problems of life. So he goes out of his way to engage people in devotional service, because it's going to solve all of their problems. So that's why he doesn't have any enemies. Although sometimes people may take the devotee as an enemy, one of it. But take it, so, you know, Prabhupada gives the example of Jesus Christ. Or even Haridas Thakur. Haridas Thakur was a preacher, but he was a Muslim. But the Muslims didn't like the fact that he'd become a Hindu. And so they, you know, beat him in 22 marketplaces. The local, I don't know what that was called, not Nawab, but, you know, the local Muslim leader there didn't like the fact that Haridas Thakur was a Muslim, but he was very popular amongst everybody, and especially amongst the Hindus, because usually the Muslims were popular amongst the Hindus. Although, you know, there was, I guess they tolerated each other. But he was envious of Haridas Thakur's spiritual standing and his being attractive to everybody. So even though Haridas Thakur didn't see him as an enemy, he saw Haridas Thakur as his enemy. So therefore he wanted to attack him. But the devotee tries to engage everybody in devotional service, and so therefore he is friendly to everyone. Oh, then there's the final summary, which I have already read. Why such risk? Why do the devotees take risks to help others? Because they wanted to spread Krishna consciousness, and it is difficult. A Krishna conscious person knows that if a man is suffering, his duty is forgetfulness of his eternal relationship with Krishna. Therefore, the highest benefit one can render to human society is relieving one's neighbour from all material problems. In such a way, a pure devotee is engaged in the service of the Lord. Now we can imagine how merciful Krishna is to those engaged in his service, risking everything for him. Therefore, it is certain that such persons must reach the supreme planet after leaving the body. Okay. Does anybody have any comments or questions? Any of these points? I don't know, but you've not quite enjoyed reading the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita this time. Now, okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2. Oh, okay, so we've got three groups of four. And one group of four and two groups of three over here. I want you to take two this is where it goes. This is what I found out. I want you to take two out of the top questions and prepare a response. So there's A, B, C, D, E, F. Take two of those and prepare a response. And then a response for the last item, case study. Understand, that's where that story about the devotee complaining he'd been chanting Hare Krishna for 6 months and hadn't seen the universal form. Right. So we need three responses. So you four here can be a group. You four here can be a group. And you four back here. You have 15 minutes to prepare your responses. Three here and four there.
All right.
What's your topic? And what's your response?
We've chosen the topic, Krishna is one of the ten incarnations of Vishnu. Yeah. Which shows the 200 form is the origin of all emanation, which is there in the purport of verse 54. And then the same purport reveals two more points. Mata Paratra Manyat, which says that there is no superior to my form as the Supreme Personality of God, Krishna. Mm. And the next statement is Eko Apisan Babuda Yo Vabati. Krishna is one, but he is manifested in unlimited forms and expanded incarnations, and Vishnu is one of them. Mm.
Okay. Next. What's your topic?
Well,
this is point F.
Yeah. We see Krishna by severely benefited by taking charity and by worshipping him. He himself recommends all these processes in the Gita itself, which is recommended by him in devotional service.
Yeah.
And in text 53, Lord himself says that he cannot be seen by studying the Vedas and undergoing severe penances or by charity, but by performing devotional services and recommended penances such as fasting on Ekadasi and on Janmashtami, and giving charity to pure devotees or building temples, and by performing the nine processes of devotional service.
We also need it. We did the same too. But it's
okay, well, give us the best of the food that you've got.
Well, just go with that, just to add on there. Because
yeah, add more.
Yeah, because Krishna says in 1948, O best of the Kuru warriors, no one before you has ever seen this universal form of mind, for neither by studying the Vedas, nor by performing sacrifices, nor by charity, nor by high activities, nor by severe penalties, cannot be seen in the supreme world. So explicitly says, only by devotional service, and that's repeated throughout the text.
Yeah.
Unless you become divine, unless you become godly, can you see? Mm. So, and then he said, the devotee is not interested in the universal form. The devotee is only interested in loving reciprocation with the Lord. And that's his concern. And then 53 states how we can achieve that. You know, the mind under the Lord. So, in summary, we don't agree.
Okay.
We cannot suggest that we found it in purpose to verse 54. It says that all of these penances, giving charity and worshiping him, is basically there just to help us become a devotee. And it says here that after you engage in all of these activities, you should find the unflinching devotion for the Supreme Lord, and you should be directed by the spiritual master in whom you should have the similar unflinching faith. Yeah. Yeah. Then you could see the Supreme Personality of God by revelation only, not by the penances.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. That's a deeper point, definitely. Penances and austerities are okay. Charity is good. Worshipping Krishna is good. It has to be done under the direction of the spiritual master. In order to then please Krishna, and by pleasing Krishna, then he'll reveal himself. But, you know, normally these things, these activities are pretty much, you know, why didn't Hiranyakashi perform austerities?
He didn't
Material, basically. So, you know, normally these activities are performed with the desire to get something back to yourself. But really what's being recommended is that you perform this activity with the desire to please Krishna, which is something completely different. It's the desire to please Krishna that's paramount, not so much exactly what you do. So when these things are done, it's not the things themselves, but when anything basically is done with a desire, following the order of the spiritual master, for the pleasure of Krishna, then it's that activity, that mentality, that's what prepares qualifies a devotee to see Krishna, or for Krishna, shall we say, qualifies a devotee so that Krishna will reveal himself. Sometimes we hear in classes, you know, if you drop this apple, if you do this, if you do that, then you'll be able to see Krishna. Huh? We sometimes think like that. That's just the other way around. We do these things so that we can cultivate a mood of reciprocation or offering to Krishna so that Krishna will want to reciprocate with us. Not that, you know, by severe practice of devotional service, we're going to storm the gates of Vaikuntha and demand Krishna to come out and show himself. And that's why, you know, Prabhupada makes that comment, I think it was from Bhakti Spandasar, where he tackled it, you know, he said, we should act in such a way so that we, not that we see Krishna, but that Krishna will see us. That's good. What else? Anything else you want to add there, gentlemen? No?
It says that in the purport of verse 55, you...
55?
Yeah. In some way, it says that Krishna is the origin of all the form. In some way, the universal form of Krishna, which is a temporary manifestation, and the form of time, which divorces everything, and even the form of Vishnu, four-handed, have all been exhibited by Krishna. That Krishna is the original form.
Yeah, Krishna is the original form. Yeah. Okay, gentlemen, what have we got? How did you choose?
We did A, also.
And?
And we did B and E.
Which give us...
Okay.
Give us not A or F.
Okay, so for B, I have personally seen Sandwich Brothers' universal form. Prabhupada says in 1148 that divine vision is necessary to see the universal form, and for divine vision you need to be divine, and that means being devoted to the Lord. And he says later in that purport that we can understand these people are bogus if they're not devotees. Hypocrite.
Sandwich Brothers.
Yeah.
Sandwich Brother doesn't have to say that he's God, does he?
Yeah.
You know, Sandwich Brother's showing you his universal form, that means he's saying I'm God.
But if that person's not a devotee, or is Sandwich Brother?
Is it Krishna?
Yeah. I mean, I guess Krishna is a Sandwich Brother.
Yeah. He doesn't say that in the way that he did, he's got a pure sandwich.
Yeah,
he's
doing 20-something in Ghana. Yeah. And for E, the universal form is greater than Krishna.
Now, which ones did you choose?
E.
Let them speak up, E then. Otherwise, you'll steal their thunder.
Should we do the understanding?
And well, we will. We'll come back. That's the last one we'll do.
Well,
which one did you do?
E.
Okay, yeah, go on.
The universal form is greater than Krishna himself. From what we read, we understood this to be not true, because in the 11th chapter, the four-handed and the two-handed forms of Krishna are eternal and transcendental, whereas the universal form is temporary, which means that the universal form can't be greater than Krishna. And also we've also understood that Krishna changes from his universal form to his four-handed form, then finally to his two-handed form,
which means that every other form emanates, has emanated from its 200 forms, making that superior. So that's cool, yeah.
Right, what have we got for the last one? Let's hear from Priti. What did you come up with that one?
The case study?
Yeah. The devotees chanted, "I've been chanting 16 rounds, I've been chanting Hare Krishna for 6 months, and I still haven't seen the universal form." Keep chanting, was Srila Prabhupada's reply. Give two Krishna conscious interpretations of that reply. What did Prabhupada mean by that? Keep chanting. Keep chanting and you'll see the universal form? What? Keep chanting and what?
Improve the quality
of
the chanting?
Huh? Improve the quality.
Follow the scriptures.
Let's see what they've got to say. It just says here, give two Krishna conscious interpretations of Prabhupada's reply. Are we sure that Prabhupada didn't mean keep chanting and you'll see the universal form?
No.
Yeah. He could have meant that.
Yeah.
No, he didn't. No.
How do you know?
He says yes. He's not interested in the universal
form. Interested in the universal form. Yeah. But if he wants to see the universal form, he's going to go to the universal form, so why can't we?
I'm interested in seeing the universal form.
Okay, how do you
know? You know what? I could think of one that to be able to see the universal form, one should be qualified to see the universal form, which is only possible if you are engaged in pure devotional service, free from crude advantage, which is obviously going to happen if you keep chanting. It can't happen just 6 months of chanting.
So you're saying Prabhupada was encouraging him to keep chanting so that he would eventually see the universal form?
He could have.
Yes, Krishna conscious.
So, and with more chanting, he probably gets more purified and understand that he doesn't need to see
the universal form of Krishna's only visible with Krishna's mercy, so it would be chanting, he eventually gets purified, he'll get Krishna's mercy and see if he's going to die. If Krishna desires, it depends on the level of surrender we do to Krishna. If the level of surrender we do is more surrender we do, depending on that, Krishna will be, he might be the universal form. You might not see the universal form.
So it means we have to surrender more for that.
To see the universal form.
You have to just imagine how much you have to surrender to see 400 and 200 forms.
I'm convinced that Prabhupada did not mean continually will see those universal forms. Prabhupada was very keen to cut all the nonsense of the 1960s, 1970s interest in
hallucinations.
Yeah, right. The psychedelia. Right. He wanted to cut it, and he was saying in a sarcastic way, get on to what you're supposed to do. Do your chanting. Devotional service is meant for establishing a loving relationship with the Lord. Focus on that. Follow the process. Yeah. Follow what the spiritual master is saying, and get on to it.
And then what happens?
You say that in the hippie.
Arjuna wanted to see the universal form with the desire to make sure that no charlatans and imposters would, you know, manifest later in Kali Yuga and say, "I'm God." You know, if they're going to present themselves as God, then they have to be able to give their devotees the eyes to see their universal form. So it's a testing mechanism. But it seems to me that Prabhupada makes the point that the devotee actually is not attracted to seeing the universal form when they see Krishna. If they see Krishna, then they're fully satisfied with that form. Right? And so they're not that attracted to the universal form because it's actually scary. It's completely scary.
I agree, but I still think it'd be pretty cool to see.
Yeah, maybe.
I wouldn't, I mean, if Krishna said he wanted to see my universal form, I wouldn't say no. Yeah, I'll check it out.
So this way, if you were seeing Krishna and he was talking to you like that, then you would be eligible to see the universal form because you're already seeing him.
But you'd be completely satisfied and satisfied by seeing him.
Yeah, you would say, hey, Krishna, is there a chance you can show me the universal form?
Yeah.
Because, you know, in my sense, it's sort of like a sense gratification. And the devotee's not really interested. You know, if you're the devotee, wants to see, you know, Arjuna was seeing the universal form in the mood of service, not because he was, you know, lacking or wanted to see it for himself, for his own pleasure. Inquisitiveness, of course.
We mentioned also one
mechanical
maybe thing is that Prabhupada somewhere said that it seemed like he is just when he's under the shower. When you are chanting, you are purifying yourself. So
you're under the shower.
So like he's just after 6 months, maybe we could compare it just entering the shower. He just started purifying himself, not yet eligible to.
So he still has a desire to see the universal form. I think Ursula's point about that, you know, coming from the psychedelic era and the devotees wanting to be impressed by some divine display of, you know, wow, I saw God, whoa. That was the mood of the times. Where people were taking LSD and other mind, sensory, emotional, altering states to see things. You know, effectively you could have any elucidation and say, oh, I saw the universal form. Alright. I think
Bhaktisar came up with a good point there.
Yeah.
Probably within 6 months he wasn't initiated yet, and so he wasn't just completely devoted.
All right, who has essays to give me? Who hasn't got their essays done yet? Okay, well, how long is it going to take? I've already given extensions on what to do? Maybe you just tell me when you're going to hand me in your essays.
Okay.
Alright, we'll see you on Thursday. We're starting chapter 12.